A morning today's daf and getting this nun bays. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as long as they're Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmua. We just have to cover yesterday's second Amud. We'll do so somewhat quickly and then we'll start with today's daf. We talked yesterday about one of the Tikkun Olam that was mentioned in the first mission of the Perek, which is dedicated to the topic of various institutions that were made by the Chachamim. Just so that society can function a little bit better. So one of them is protecting a person after finding a lost object, returning it to the owner. The owner says, thank you so much, but I only see half of the money in the wallet that was returned to me. So make a shvuah, please, that you didn't take the other half. So as I commented yesterday, if that were the case, so then the finder would have made two shvuahs. One is to the owner that I didn't take the other half, and the other shvuah, of course, is that I will never return a lost item once again. So the Chachamim understood that, they realized that, so they indemnified the finder from having to make a shvuah. So that's the last takanah that we learned back in the Mishnah. You find a lost item, you return the lost item. It's kind of like a good Samaritan law. So you return it. So that's it. You are protected. You will not be challenged to prove that you didn't take anything. So if you look back in the Gemara, let's turn back to Nun Alpha Medalef. We started this yesterday, but just quickly, just to take us to the beginning of the sugya, Amar Rebbe Yitzchak. It starts at the bottom of Nun Alpha Medalef. Shnei kisim kshur matzas aliva halomer lo matzas yala echad. Nishba. If let's say the finder says to the owner of the item, look, I found your wallet. He's like, wait, one second. Whoa, slow down. There were two wallets that were tied to one another. So how come there's only one? So the Braisa says you have to make a shvuah. Shnei shivarim kishurim matzasi liv halamar lo hava elach echad einu nishba. If let's say on the other hand the owner says, thank you so much for returning my ox, but it was an ox, it was a pair of oxen. Where's the other ox? So there, the finder doesn't have to make a shvuah. My time a shvar me'natchi me'adadi kislam me'natchi me'adadi. Because the wallets, one wallet's not going to go run away. Just not going to happen. So in other words, if the two wallets were tied together, so the owner has what Rashi describes as being a tainus bari. He knows that there were two wallets there. And where did the other wallet go? Right? I have a very legitimate claim against you. How come you're only returning one wallet to me? So under those circumstances, now you have to make a shvuah mod de b'mitzas. However, in the case of oxen, it's very possible these are animals, or once very much more than likely, that one of the animals just simply ran away. So when the owner says, thank you for returning my ox, where's the other one? So now that's not a tiny bar, it's a tiny shema. He doesn't know that the finder in fact found two oxen. Could be that it was only one ox there. That's the difference. Now the last case of the Braisa is where the claim and counterclaim went like this. Thank you so much for finding my two oxen, and thank you so much for returning them to me, but there were two. And the returner says, no, I only returned one. So now they're arguing over how many oxen were returned. Owner says two, the finder says one, so this is a case of mod b'mitzas, and the taina of the owner is a taina's bari. In other words, he really believes that there were two that should have been returned to him. Okay, so the... So that's the Braisa. Now the Gemara's obvious question is, wait one second, what's going on in this Braisa? We learned in our Mishnah that we protected the finder, and the finder doesn't have to make a shvuah. So what's going on over here? And that's the Gemara's question. So what is Rabbi Yitzchak doing in this Braisa when meanwhile, is he just ignoring our Mishnah? So the Gemara says, a little bit, yeah. In other words, in a limited sense, top of Nanafam and Bezu Damaker Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So Gemara says that what we'll do is we will line up Rabbi Yitzchak with the position Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Did Tanya Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amir Pamim Shadam Nishba Al Tanas Atzmo? A person can make a shvua on his very own claim. Now, generally speaking, the way shvua works is that it is to protect a person against a claim. Meaning, generally speaking, how does shvua operate? Generally, and certainly this is true in the Torah. So I have have a person making a claim against me, and either it's he has one witness on his side, or it's a pikadon where he entrusted me with an item, and now he's asking me where the item is. So generally speaking, the way Shvuah operates is that the one claimed against is the nitan, so he's going to make a Shvuah to combat the claim. Generally speaking, that's how Shvuah works. What the Gemara now is noting over here, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, is that sometimes you can make a Shvuah on your very own claim. Meaning, you'll make a claim, and then to fortify your own claim, you're going to make a Shvuah. The Gemara says, how is that going to work? Ketzad? Mana la'avicha biyadi. So, vehechalti pras. So, let's say, for example, I go over to a person, I say, here, look, I bet you didn't know. Your father entrusted me with $100. Okay, and I gave half of it back to him. So I'm going over to the son, and basically, it's like I'm giving him a gift, but I'm explaining to him. I took 100 from your father, I gave him back 50, so I owed him 50, so here's the 50. And so this would be an example, a scenario in which you're going to make a shvuah on your very own claim. Meaning the kid didn't know that you had, that he was owed $50 from you. You're the one explaining to him, hey, I owe you $50, but again, the background is, I borrowed 100 from your father, I gave him back 50, so now I'm going to owe you back the other 50. So the Chachamim Amrim, Eino Ela Kemeshev Avedu Pater. And the Chachamim say, no, this is Hashavas Aveda. This is no different than our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that when you return a lost item, you are indemnified. Here too, you're returning a lost item, the kid would never have known about it. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Leis Lemeshev Avedu Pater. Now again, we turn back to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, and essentially we're going to ask now the same question. Wait a second. He is returning a lost item. Again, it's not, I understand, it's not exactly a lost item, but when all said and done, the kid never would have known about it had I not told him. So I'm a Rav Bitara no Katan. So Rav says, well, maybe the scenario over here is that there was a claim made against this guy. Maybe the minor son made a claim against him. So the Gemara says, Katan, midi mishashi isbe? Oh, what do you mean? The minor son made a claim against you? That's not even a claim. V'atanan, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah Shavuos. Ein ish bar natas kerishot v'katan. If somebody is a lav bar das, if someone does not have his mental faculty, so that's not a claim. If a minor is making a claim against you, it's simply not a claim. So the Gemara is now asking, what do you mean the minor made a claim against you? So what? So my katan gadol. So the Gemara says, well, you didn't understand. When Rav said that the minor made a claim against you, it didn't mean that he was actually a minor. It meant that he was the son of. But he was an adult. So the Gemara says, v'amai karalei katan, delagabi miladav, if katan who? The name katan only means that these weren't his financial affairs. This was his father's financial affairs. He's not fully understanding or invested in knowing what his father's affairs were. So the Gemara says that's why in this context we're calling him a katan. But what this kid, and it's not a kid now, it's an adult. But what the adult is saying is, hey, didn't my father lend you money? So that's the taina. So yehachi taina satma taina achirmu. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. Then we don't even understand what how the case is operating. The whole case was predicated on, hey, here's a scenario in which someone is going to make a shvua on his very own claim. It's not his very own claim. Somebody else is contesting him. So taina achirmu das atzmo. So the Gemara says, okay, someone else is contesting him, but now he's making an admission. The Gemara says that's how it always works. Kulu nami das atzmoninu. Every scenario of Moda Bimixas works in that fashion. Someone makes a claim against me, I make an admission. Hey, you know, you're right, but you're not fully right. I did owe you $100, but I paid you back 50, and now I owe you another 50. That's how it always works. So now, how is this case different than any other case of Moda Bimixas? To which the Gemara says, Ela b'derabba k'mifligi. So here, really what's at the core of this issue is understanding the Shvuah of Moda Bimixas using the explanation of Rabba. This Gemara is presented multiple times throughout Shas. Here we go. It's on the back end of Daphne and Aleph. Amar Rabba b'nima amra Torah Moda Bimixas itani yishava. Why is there a shvuah of modem and mitzvahs? Meaning, someone makes a claim against me I'm owing him $100. I say, I don't owe you $100, I owe you $50. The Torah imposes a shvuah upon me. I have to make a shvuah of modem and mitzvahs. Why? And here Rabbah's going to give his famous, I say famous because it comes up again and again throughout Shas, his famous explanation of, there's a psychology behind the shvuah of modem and mitzvahs. How does it work? So we have a general assumption. First of all, people are not that chutzpahdik where they're going to deny the entire money. the entire claim. Meaning, let's say the truth of the matter is I do owe him $100. We have a general presumption. I'm not going to say I owe you nothing. Nobody's that chutzpahdik. Not nobody, but generally speaking, it's a fair assumption that nobody would be that chutzpahdik. So meiz panav bifnei bachova v'hai b'kulei bar lemichver elei v'hai delo kafre mishum de'in adam meiz panav bifnei bachova. Meaning you had a thought, a fleeting thought of maybe denying everything, but you're not going to deny everything because we're not that brazen. Uvekulei bar delu delei now. Okay, so if I'm not going to deny everything, so what's the other option? The other option is okay, admit. I owe you the money. Okay, but here now we get on to the nuance of human nature. And that is, if I admit everything, then I'm going to have to pay, and I don't have all the money right now. So what I'll do is, I'll play a game. And the game, the way that my mind justifies and rationalizes, is that, look, I'll admit to part of the claim right now, and then, later on, when I get the money, I'll pay him. I'm sure of it. And I'm not worried whatsoever. I can't deny everything. I can't admit everything. So I'll play these games where I'm going to admit to part of it, and the other part, when I get around to it, and when I get the money, I'll then do it. And that's why the Torah imposes a shvuv modem mimitzas. It's the Torah pressuring us to admit, I mean, pressuring meaning in a good way, right? Motivating us, that's a nicer way to say it. Motivating us to admit to the full loan, because the truth of the matter is, we do owe the full loan. That is the psychological mechanics of modeh b'mitzvos. Now the Gemara says, now that we're here, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, Savar lo shna bo v'lo shna b'vno, eino meis. Now, in this first step of modeh b'mitzvos, what do we say? People don't have the kind of chutzpah. Because, think about it. Here's a guy who lent me money. I'm going to look him right in the face. I'm going to look, stare him straight in the eye, and I'm going to say to him, no, I don't owe you anything? That's crazy. So Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is of the opinion that this is true. This is true both towards him, and this assumption is also true towards the son as well. Even though it's not the son who lent me the money. It was the father who lent me the money. But still, I'm appreciative of the fact that the father lent me the money. I'm not going to look at the kid directly in the eye and say, I don't owe you anything. And so now, whether the denial is going straight at the partial denial is going to the father, or if he's no longer alive, to the son, then we're going to start with that chazaka that I wouldn't be so brazen to deny everything. Okay. And Now that we start off with that assumption, so now this is not a Shavas Aveda, because I'm not going to deny everything. I will never start off with from the position of denying everything. And what about the Chachamim? The Chachamim say, I agree with Rabbah. But I agree with Rabbah only to the principal, only to the one who lent me the money. There is no way I will look at him and say, oh, I don't owe you anything. But to the kid, that's not the one who lent me the money. And so to the kid, the Chachamim are going to assume, I will look at him straight in the eye and I will say to him, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't owe you anything. So since that's a starting point, so any money I give back to the kid is considered basically like Hashavas Aveda. And that's why, according to the Chachamim, once I'm returning any amount of money to the kid, since the starting point is a person would be brazen enough to deny everything, so really the truth of the matter is, it's not like I don't owe anything, but I could put myself in a position, obviously by stating a lie, but I could put myself in a position where I don't owe him anything, I'm handing him some money, and you know what? Just take it, and I'm not going to make a shvuah. Okay, so the Gemara says, that's a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim, and that then explains the brisa of Rabbi Yitzchak, and then Rabbi Yitzchak is not going directly against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is talking about to the principal. To the principal, you never would make such a bold-faced lie. But to the son of the principal, maybe. That's the machlokas. Okay, we start today's daf, we're in Nun Beis Amud Aleph. We are at the starting the new Mishnah. Okay, self-contained daf today. Started a little bit late. Finishing up yesterday's daf. Okay, today's daf is dedicated to the topic of apotropos. We have a situation in halacha that presents itself again and again. Today's daf is really the daf in which discusses it just straight out, and that is guardianship. we know that one of the takanas that was instituted is that you have an orphan, God forbid the parents die and leave children at a very young age, so there's guardianship. So there are people that are entrusted to take care of the estate and watch the estate until the children grow up. Okay, ages, interestingly enough, we're never going to see in this daf. Meaning, I cannot tell you, just based on the daf and the Rishonim on the daf themselves, I cannot tell you at what age we're going to be talking about guardianship in terms of instituting a guardian, in terms of when the terms of the guardianship are over. I don't know. I can give you my best guess, but why would I do that? It would be a guess. So but there's this idea that if there are yusomim, if there are orphans, and there's an estate to be taken care of, so the guardians will take care of the estate. And what we're going to be learning over the course of today's daf is basically the extent of how involved they are going to be in terms of the care and the caretaking of the estate. So with that stated, just one other word of introduction. In terms of creating an apotropos, in terms of creating a guardian, there basically are three types of guardians. Number one, a guardian who is not appointed, but just simply steps forward, takes care of the children, almost becomes like a default guardian. For no other reason than just assumes a position. Right, being there is, more than anything else in life, being in the right place in the right time is just, the natural, organic way of turning into a guardian. Or, that's one way to become a guardian, or an appointment. And even in the appointment, it can be broken down in one of two ways. Either the appointment can be done by Beis Din, where Beis Din now understands that here's a scenario where the children, there's an estate, no one's taking care of it, so Beis Din can make an appointment, or it could be that the parent appointed somebody prior to the death to serve as the guardian of their children in the event that they die. So, it could either be an organic guardian, or it can be an appointed guardian, either appointed by either the parents or by the Beis Din. Those are the three different types of apotropos. Let us start now with the Mishnah.
Is there a differentiation between a guardian and
So in the English language, I can't speak to that. In halacha, here's what's very clear, is that there is a spectrum in terms of what degree the guardian is serving as an agent of the children. Again, I'm not speaking in English terminology, and I don't know the nuanced differences. But you'll see in the Gemara, right, various debates that take place within the Gemara. It's a question of how much he's serving as an agent of the children, or just a simple general caretaker of the estate itself. We'll go through some of the details, and you'll see that inside. So if the yesomim, where first scenario in the Mishnah is some chleitz abalabayis, meaning organic. This is the person that's been taking care of the kids. So he wasn't appointed to be a guardian, it just simply happens to be that he's the one been taking care of them. Or minolam aviam apotropos, or the father appointed them an apotropos. Chayv laser parasim. So step number one, says the Mishnah, is that they have to take off shumas and maisos. And as we'll learn in the Gemara, we're talking about a scenario where the kids want to eat. The kids want to eat the produce of the estate. Well, you can't eat produce until you take off shumas and maisos. So the apotropos is required to take off shumas and maisos, even though the apotropos is not the principal owner of the estate. They're just the caretaker of the estate. Nevertheless, they're going to take off shumas and maisos.
If the children are minor, are they here in the mitzvah of...
Right, that's a good question. I'll sidestep the question for now, but that is a good question. Apotropos shemino avi yisomim yishava. Mino beizin lo yishava. Now, what about making a shvua? Meaning, at the conclusion of the serving of guardianship, do they have to swear and say, we did not misappropriate? So, the Mishnah says, depends. According to the Tanakhama, if they were appointed by the father, so then they do have to make a shvua. If they were appointed by Beis Din, they do not need to make a shvua. The reason we'll explain later this morning. Abba Shaul Amar Chiluf Hadvarim, and Abba Shaul says exactly the opposite. And Abba Shaul's reasons we'll explain later this morning as well. Urim Minhu. The Gemara is bothered by a very simple problem, and that is the apotropos does not have the right to take off Chumas and Maisos. It's very clear from the following Braisa. The Torah, when describing the mitzvah of Hafrashas Chumas and Maisos, the Torah says, Atem. Atem means you, only the owner of the produce has the right to take off Trumas HaMaisos. Atem v'lo shutfim, not your partner. Meaning, if your partner wants to take off the Trumas HaMaisos on his share, God bless him. If your partner wants to take the Trumas HaMaisos on your share, he can't do that. Atem v'lo arisim, not the sharecropper. Sharecropper who gets a percentage of the produce. Again, we'll say the same thing. If he wants to take the Trumas HaMaisos on his share, that's fine. But not on the landowner's share. Atem v'lo apotropin. The apotropist cannot take off Trumas HaMaisos because it's not his. He's only a guardian over the estate. V'lo atarmish einu shalo. And if somebody's not the owner, he can't take off Trumas HaMaisos. Rashi says the way to understand this last line of the Braisa is it's just explaining all the previous points. The reason why you can't do that is because you are not the owner. And Rashi also offers another explanation, but that's Rashi's first pshat in the Gemara. Amar Rav Chisda Lokasha. Okay, so here we have a basic stira. Our Mishnah says apotropos is to take off Trumas HaMaisos. The Braisa says the apotropos is not to. Gemara gives a very simple resolution. Lokasha kan lahachil kan lahaniach. Gemara says it's very simple. If the kids need to eat, so then the apotropos is commissioned to take off Trumas HaMaisos. Because you can't eat until you take off Trumas HaMaisos. If, let's say, we're going to take off Trumas HaMaisos, but only to lay away for later, the apotropos is not commissioned to do that. Wait till the kids get older. I understand, if we're talking about fruits like grapes, they're not going to last 5 years, 10 years. It's not going to happen. But if we're talking about grains, wheat, barley, so then yeah. So then let them sit in the silo. Let them wait until the kids get older. And then when the kids get older, they'll take off Trumas HaMaisos if the kids don't need to eat it right away. That's the distinction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. V'hatanya. This V'hatanya, as Rashi points out, is a support for the distinction that we just made. And here we are now. We're going to learn a long Braisa together. This Braisa goes through numerous details regarding the apotropos. Ha'apotropin tarmin ma'aser la'achil v'lo la'aniach. Already the first line of the Braisa is really all we needed in order to make the point that Gemara wanted to make. There's a distinction between eating versus putting it away. For eating, you take off the apotropos, takes off Trumas HaMaisos. For putting it away, no. We'll wait till the kids grow up. And then the apotropos buys for the children using the estate money whatever the children need currently. Animals, slaves, houses, fields, vineyards. But that's only, of course, if the kid needs it for immediate usage. But don't try to make investments with the money. Meaning, don't buy property as an investment for the kid. As we'll see throughout the Gemara today, the basic investment strategy of the apotropos is super conservative. In other words, we'll see later on, maybe one kind of investment strategy, but really super conservative. I mean by that, total status quo. Don't change a thing. Fruit, wine, oil, flour can be purchased all for consumption, but not to be stored for a later time. Terms of supplying mitzvahs for the children, so the apotropos is commissioned to buy the child lulav, arav, a sukkah, tzitzis, and anything that has a fixed cost, lasuya shofar, and that comes to include even a shofar as well. Again, the apotropos is commissioned to buy for the child the mitzvahs of Torah, tefillah, and mezuzah, anything which has a set price, asuya megillah, including the mitzvah of megillah as well. The apotropos is not to take off tzedakah from the estate. Rashi points out, because tzedakah is unending. They're always going to be, and Rashi writes, they're always going to be a neim at the door, they're always going to ask for money, and so therefore there is no set amount. So therefore the apotropos, again, super conservative, don't take off money for tzedakah. Just give me a second. In Podim Aleim Asa Shvuyim, also no pitch in Shvuyim, which is really a subcategory of Tztaka as well. V'lo kol dav v'shein lo kitzva. Anything that does not have a set fixed amount, the apotropos is not to do. Lasui tanchumi avelim, tanchumi avelim. Also, a communal fund to help the help nichum avelim, feed them, whatever other costs come up. So once again, don't tap into the estate of the orphans, because once again, it's an unending need of the community, and so therefore the estate is not to be touched. Yes?
What does an orphan need this particularly if it's Sefer Torah for?
Well, the Sefer Torah to learn tefillin to wear, I did see a discussion. So I did see a discussion. Generally speaking, we don't put on tefillin until we're adults, and you know, various menhagim in terms of like, you know, a week or a month before the bar mitzvah, right? Various menhagim. But I saw that maybe by the Yasom they are. You'll forgive me. I forgot where I saw this, but maybe by the Yasom, without a parent, so he should be starting to wear tefillin even at an earlier age. But I don't have a source for it. But anyway, okay.
What about Sefer Torah?
Right, Sefer Torah.
What is he going to do with Sefer Torah?
Learn. What do you mean learn? He's going to. Yeah, they didn't have. They didn't have Sfarim. Their Sefer Torah was there safer. They would learn from it. Also, what about litigation? So the apotropis is not to go into litigation for the child, so not in favor of the child, and certainly not to lose any assets of the child. So Zakus Amaylo, the Gemara says, wait one second. Why not go into litigation to win? So the Gemara says, El alachov amanasa zakos benichse yisomim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but once you go, and this is Rashi's explanation, once you go into litigation, you're not guaranteed to win. Once you go into litigation, you could win, but you could also lose. So just don't open up that Pandora's box. Don't go into litigation at all. And basically, if there's any litigation, it'll be suspended until the child gets older. And again, like I mentioned earlier, a super conservative philosophy regarding the investments. You can't even sell properties that are far away and buy properties that are close by. Obviously, it would be in the interest of the child to have the estate within proximity. It doesn't matter. Once the estate is set up, once the estate has certain holdings, you keep the holdings, period. So even if that means that the field is far away. Let's say there was a buying opportunity to buy a better property. Doesn't matter. The apotropos is not commissioned to do that. My time at the Duma Mishtatzvin. Because once again, you don't know what's going to happen, even if it seems like a better property. Property may get flooded. You just simply don't know. So don't do, if the properties get flooded on their own, okay, that's fine. But don't do anything which you think is better, but may end up not being good.
Don't be practical.
Right. Don't sell property in order to buy slaves. But according to the Tanakhama, you can go in the other direction. You can sell slaves in order to buy property. Property is, you know, slaves, although have the status of karka, but when all said and done, they're people, they're humans, and they could die. The property, however, obviously has more endurance. So on this one move, the Tanakhama allows you to do that, to sell off slaves in order to buy property. And even on this, Rosh Hashanah and Gamaliel balks, and he says, no, don't even do that. Keep the avadim. Don't exchange them for property. My time adam alam shafin. Because even when you buy a property, you never know how that's going to go. There could be that a proper title search on the property was not done well. It could be that someone has a lien on the property. It could be that the seller who sold you the property wasn't even the owner of the property. So a number of things can go bad. Once again, the Rishim and Gamaliel is even more conservative. The apotropin is not allowed to free the slaves. Meaning, as Rashi points out, even if this doesn't represent a financial loss to the minor, to the orphan, let's say that someone's sponsoring the freedom of the slaves, so that means now that the child is going to get, the estate is going to get remunerated for the sale, for the freedom of the slave, still you can't do it. Now, there's an important Rashi over here. Let me just highlight this Rashi. Why not? Why can't you free the slave, especially considering that you're going to get remunerated? And again, even in our super conservative approach towards investment, but sounds like a very solid proposal. The slave may die. If you get money in exchange for the slave, so that's a, you know, that has a more enduring, that has more endurance to it. So why not? So very interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says that the minor does not have the ability to sell to free the slave. As we've discussed already earlier in the fourth perek, in order to free the slave, you have to have a kinyan haguf on the slave. The minor doesn't have it. Rashi writes that. And that's why he can't free the slave. Now, this Rashi certainly helps us understand this very next line of the Gemara. This line of the Gemara says, but here's what you can do. The estate can sell the slave to somebody else, and so now you're getting money for the slave, and that other person who purchased the slave, he can free the slave. Why should that be? So according to Rashi, it works out beautifully, because the only problem with the freeing of the slave is that the minor did not have a kinyan haguf in the slave in order to free the slave. Somebody else only does. Rabbi Omer Omerani, afu nosin demei atzmo, v'yotzim imneshu kemochro lo. And Rebbe's of the opinion the apotropos also can free the slave. Why? Because the apotropos will take money on behalf of the estate, and the apotropos, who is an adult, has the ability to free the slave. So that's the opinion of Rebbe. Obviously, the Tanna Kamma disagrees with Rebbe, and it could be, I'm just a mere suggestion on my part, it could be that really what's at the core of the debate between the Tanna Kamma and Rebbe is basically, once again, how to look at the apotropos. Is the apotropos really just a agent of the child? So that means the apotropos can do no more than what the child can do. If the child can't free the slave, neither can the apotropos. And it could be, and again, I'm just merely making a suggestion, it could be that Rebbe's of the opinion, no, the apotropos is more like a guardian of the estate, but the apotropos also has an identity, and he's an adult, and he could free the slave. So maybe that's really what's that at issue over here. And finally, we're still in the Braisa. Tzarech lechashev man b'achrona, and accounting has to be done at the end of his guardianship to make sure that he didn't misappropriate. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Enot Tzarech, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says no such accounting needs to be done. Enos in apotropos nashim v'avad v'ketanim. In terms of the appointment of a guardian, women, slaves, and minors cannot serve as guardians. V'iminam avias. Some members just be adult. But if the father appoints these people, either a woman or a slave or a minor as a guardian, hard to imagine even a minor. It's hard to imagine. But but if the father appoints them as a guardian, so then certainly it's within his right to do so if he feels that a woman, a particular woman, would do an excellent job. In fact, the Gemara is going to tell stories in just a moment about certain women who acted as a guardian. Okay, Adkan Divrei HaBraisa. That was a long Braisa, and the Braisa's purpose over here was to teach us that there is a valid distinction between right here, right now, versus for a later point in time. If the children need to eat right now, the apotropos is now commissioned to take off Trumas Maisos. If it's Lahatznia, if it's to put it away for a later time, so then no, the apotropos cannot take off Trumas Maisos. Okay. With all that stated, we are going to now rattle off story after story in the Gemara regarding an apotropos. Story number one. How apotropos dava bishavavuse de Rameir. There was a garden in the community of Rameir. Dava kamizabin arasa vizabin avde. So, I'm sorry. Mazbin arasa vizabin avde. So what did he do? He would sell off properties and he would buy slaves, which we just learned in the Braisa, you cannot do. V'lo shafku Rav Meir. In fact, Rav Meir says, don't do that. He actually blocked the sale, because as a guardian, he is not in commission to do such a transaction. Achvo lebechama, now Rav Meir went to bed that night, and the following appeared to him in a dream. Anu laharos v'ata livnos. So, I don't understand. We're trying to help, and what are you trying to do? Meaning, basically, he got reprimanded in the dream. Now, who's doing this? It's not perfectly clear in the Gemara, but basically, he got reprimanded. What are you doing? So, to which Rav Meir says, it's a dream. Meaning, halachically, I'm right. I'm standing on the correct side of halacha. I know, you know, I've had, you know, some nocturnal encounter with some, you know, however you want to describe it, that says to do otherwise. But he says, I'm not. That's not going to influence my decision. Story number two. Hanu betray the igra beusat the igar beusat and the chove shimsha have a kamenatz about the adade. There were two people who always fought on erev Shabbos and consistently. Ikla Rabbi Meir lahasam akvina talsa be shimsha. And now what Rabbi Meir did, this story has nothing to do with Apotropos, but it has to do with Rabbi Meir, so that's why the Gemara injects it over here. Rabbi Meir went three consecutive erev Shabboses to these two people and stopped them from fighting on three consecutive erev Shabbos. So basically what he did is he broke the chain. He created a new habit where they're not going to fight on erev Shabbos, but they're going to actually be peaceful. Ad avalu shama, and he created shalom between the two. Shama de kamer, and on that Rav Meir overheard a statement that was made by Vaidavker Rav Meir laugavra mi beise. The Satan said in the presence of Rav Meir, you know, you're taking me out of my job, meaning I'm unemployed. My whole employment was to get them to fight, and now you stop them from fighting. So now I'm unemployed. So again, the Gemara tells the story over here. A, it has to do with Rabbi Meir, and also things that Rabbi Meir overheard from, you know, Acharei Apargud, from the, you know, from the other side. But okay. Story number three. Ha'u apotropos dehavi b'shavusa de Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So there was a garden who lived in the community of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, dehavi kamaz ben ara v'zavin ture. He would sell property, and with the proceeds of that sale, he would then buy for the estate oxen. So, v'lo amalu v'lo midi. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, oh, okay, good. Now, based on the little information that I know, and that we all just learned together, that's not good. You can't sell property, and selling property for animals? Sounds crazy, but Rav Yeshua ben Levi was fine with it. Savalak Rav Yosi, Detanya Amar Rav Yosi, Miyamai, Lo Karisi, Lishti, Ishti, Lashari, Lashari. The Gemara says that on this, Rav Yeshua ben Levi felt that the purchase of oxen is a phenomenal investment. Rav Yosi made the statement, I never refer to my wife as my wife. I never refer to my oxen as my oxen. Elo Lishti, Beisi. Whenever making reference to my wife, I refer to her as my house. Rashi says she's the Akeres Abayas. She's the anchor of the home. So that's so the designation of his wife as being his home, Ula Shari Sadai. And as far as the oxen are concerned, those are my fields. Meaning, those are the most stable investment that I can think of. There's nothing better than oxen. They're really what, I mean this literally, they're what drive my field. So without the oxen, my field means nothing to me. So they are a stable investment. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi felt that it would be fair for the guardian to exchange property for oxen. Story number four. Hanu Yasmid Avis Micha Gabe Ahu Safta. There was a woman who was a guardian for these orphans. Havale Turasa Shakla Vizivinta Nihalaihu. So what did she do? She sold the oxen of these orphans. Also Krovim Lakamid Rav Nachman. And so the relatives go to Rav Nachman and are protesting. What is this woman doing to the estate of our relative orphans? Amrle Mai Vidita Dizavna. I'm sorry. They said to him, "What is she doing? She's selling off the oxen." So he says back to them, "What do you mean? She's a guardian. That's in other words. And I know there was no appointment over here, but as we learned back in our Mishnah, there doesn't have to be an appointment if someone is serving as the default guardian. So they have the status of a guardian. V'ha'iyakar. So now the relatives are still complaining to Rav Nachman. Oh, but the price of oxen went up. So Birshusa Delokeach Yakar. So Rav Nachman said, okay. So the price went up. It happens, and it happened after the Lokeach acquired them. Okay, so it wasn't her best investment strategy, but basically Rav Nachman said, but it's done, it's over. Like, get over it. V'halo nikiti dame. Oh, but wait one second. She didn't get paid yet for the oxen. So right now she sold them. Meshicha was done, right? They took the oxen, but they didn't pay for it yet. So amalu imkein hainu d'Rav Chanilai bar Idi. So finally Rav Nachman perked up. Rav Nachman said, oh, now you have a case. Now what she can do as a guardian is she can take back the oxen. Hainu d'Rav Chanilai bar Idi. Amar Shmuel, the Amar of Chalai Baridi, Amar Shmuel, Nichse Yisomem Harein Kehetesh, Volamakne Ella Bekaspa. And we're going to treat the estate of orphans like Hektesh, where the acquisition can be done through kesef. Just as a quick introduction to understand all this. Generally speaking, we're going to do this in the beginning of kedushin at length. But for our purposes, let's just go over the basics. Whenever you make an acquisition on movable items, so generally speaking, the way to acquire is meshicha, is to take the item, to physically take the item. What about money? Isn't money a proper way of acquisition? So min haTorah, yes. But the Chachamim were worried that if I paid for an item, but I didn't take them yet, so the seller is going to say, okay, they're not mine anymore. I don't need to take care of them. Let's say the barn's on fire. Not my problem. They're not mine. So what the Chachamim did is that the Chachamim created a security measure so that the seller is going to take care of the items until they're actually physically out of his possession. Even if the items were paid for, but still, kinyan will be done only with Mashiach. Okay, that's a general rule when it comes to movables. However, when doing business with Hekdesh, Hekdesh will own items even at the point of the payment of money, even with kesef. Rashi over here quotes a pasuk. Hekdesh can be acquired with money. So over here, when it comes to the estate of the Yesomim, so Shmuel makes a statement that we treat their estate like Hekdesh, which means that money is going to create the acquisition and not Meshicha. And so now, once it was explained to Rav Nachman that the woman sold the oxen and the price went up and the buyer didn't pay for it, So Rav Nachman says, "Oh, now you have a case. You'll go now. Now the sale has not yet been ratified. She can go back. She should go back, and she should take back the oxen." Next story. Story number 5. Chamri de Rabbana Ukva Yasmei Mashkoa Barba Arba. So the wine of a certain orphan was sold for $4 a barrel. The yakar v'kam b'shisa shisa, and then it went up in price to $6 a barrel. Also, l'kam to Rav Nachman, and once again they go to Rav Nachman. So amalu hainu Rav Chanelai bar Idi, amar Rav Chanelai bar Idi, amar Shmuel nechse yusam harin kehektish v'lo makdila b'kaspa. So then Rav Nachman once again gave the same exact advice. As long as the buyer hasn't paid for it yet, so the seller of, in this case, the guardian of the orphan's estate can take back the wine. Wine went up 50% in value. So the
there was no other extra kinyan besides the money in this case, or the wine.
By wine it would be Mashiach. And Mashiach was done, but it wasn't paid for. And so that's what Rav Nachman says. It wasn't paid for yet, so good. So you can take it back. Now, Mishoch Pere Miyasme Iyaker. Now, here we're going to basically go over every permutation of how a kinyan was done between an outsider and the estate of the orphans. Now, the Gemara is going to give us a ruling on every one of them. Mishoch Pere Miyasme Iyaker. Let's say that the fruit of orphans was purchased, and it went up in value. Hainadarav Chanelai Baridi. That is Rami Chanelai Baridi, meaning if they have not been paid for yet, so then the estate could take it back. What do you mean, Mashiach was done? So once again, that's exactly what we just learned. That even though Mashiach was done, but when it comes to the estate of orphans, we treat it like Hekdesh, where the transaction is only going to be ratified, only when money is given. Zol, now what if the price of the fruit goes down? Now the price of the fruit goes down, so can't now the buyer say to the estate, here, you know what, take it back. I didn't want these fruit anyway. So the Gemara says no. Lo ye kochejo chamar mehekdesh. So the Gemara says no. At this point in time, even though yes, we said that it's like hekdesh, but at the same time, we're not going to make the power of the estate any less than that of hejot, which means that if it was taken, so then the transaction is ratified. So and basically, you'll see the common thread throughout all this is that we will endeavor to favor the estate of the orphans. That's part of advocating on behalf of the orphans. Next. Im shechulu pere liyasme. Let's say Mashiach was done on behalf of the estate. So then iyakar lo yeh kolachejo chamer mehekdesh. So now, if Mashiach was done and the price went up, so now the estate, or in this case the guardian, can say, hey, you know what, we're going to give it back to you. Because remember, we're talking about the estate of orphans, and by Hekdesh, a sale is only ratified with money, We didn't give you money yet. So you know what? Take it back. So Zol, now what if the price goes down? So Savra mina hainu derav chanelai bar idi. So now, maybe the Gemara is thinking for a moment that we can invoke the rule of Rav Chanelai Bar Idi, which means that we're going to treat them like Hekdesh. And if we're going to treat them like Hekdesh, so if the money goes down, so if the price goes down, so then essentially the estate can say to the seller, hey, you know what? The price went down. Let's adjust over here. Meaning, you're going to sell it to us at the lower price. So I'm Rav Shisha Bar Idi, Rav Idi, ha ra'a hi lididu. So the Rav Shisha Bar Idi, Rav Idi says, no, let's not do that. Because, let's consider, if I'm selling to the estate of orphans, I'm in a losing proposition, meaning that if money has not been transferred and the price goes down, they're going to renegotiate the price. You know what? I'm not going to sell to the estate of children. I'm not going to put myself in such a losing proposition. To which the Gemara says that's exactly a point to consider. So the Zimnan de Mistach Leper Valekidiavale Adiyav Zuze. Because what's going to happen is that you're going to see the guardian of the orphans walk through the marketplace, and every seller is going to say, you know what? You have money? Great. You don't have money? I'm not selling you on credit. Because I know what's going to happen. Price is going to go down. You're going to renegotiate with me the sale. You know what? You'll buy from somebody else. You won't buy from me. So basically, the Chachamim understood that we can't do that because then no one's going to want to sell to the estate. Yavi Yasmi Zuzei Apere. What if money was given for fruit? So now, let's say the price goes down. Okay, but they paid for it. And by Hektish, we know that money consecrates a deal. Iyaker. Now, what if the price goes up? Savor mina hainu derav chanelai bar idi. Amalu rav shisha bar derav idi. Hara'a hi lididu. Once again, that could potentially be bad for the estate. Diasilamemelahu nisrafu chitchem ba'aliyah. Because here, we're going to simply say, look, if even though money was given, but there was no mashicha, so now, is the seller really going to take care of the fruit on behalf of the estate? Not necessarily. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, once again, the transaction is not going to be ratified until mashicha is done. Yavelu zizili yasme apere. Let's say money was given to the Yisomim for fruit, Iyaker. Now, what if the price goes up? Lo yeh kolachejo chamer mehektesh. So now, the kolachejo should not be any better than hektesh. Zol, now what if the price goes down? Savar mina, hayna derav chanelai bar idi. Amalu rav shisha bar idi, ha ra'a hi lididu. Once again, you have to forecast how is this going to affect all future transactions. The zimnin de mitzarch lezuzeh, because what's going to happen? The estate's going to need money. V'leke di ayvle adi ayvle pay. And people are going to say to him, I'm not going to advance you any money until you actually give me the fruit, because I don't want this. I don't want you to renegotiate after I already gave you the money. So basically, you have to look ahead and see how this will affect future transactions. And to which the Gemara says, the sale will be completed with the money. Amar Rav Ashi, Anav Rav Kahana, Chasmina Nashtar, Di'imei Dezir Yasme. We signed on a contract for the mother of Zeira Yasme, meaning she was the guardian, Demizavne Ara Lakarga, and she sold off property, but for a good reason, because government was coming and collecting taxes, and she needed money for tax, below Achrazasa, and she sold the property without making a public auction, a public declaration. We learned in Erchin, the Gemara Ksuvos also, that in order to sell off properties of the estate, and again, selling legitimately, because they need the money right now, so generally speaking, it has to be done at a public auction in order to command the best price for the estate. Here, however, if the money is needed immediately, so then you could sell even without achrazah. Dami naradai, kargo mazoni lekvura mizavnim v'lo achrazasa. There are certain scenarios in which it's understood the money is needed right here, right now. Taxes, food, burial. Right, those are immediate needs, and so therefore you could sell off estates, and you don't have to do it through a public auction. Amram Sava Patrapa Diasme. Amram the dyer was a guardian of orphans. Hava Asakrovna Kamidar of Nachman. And now right? It's just a truism in life. Anytime you put yourself in a public position, so you open yourself up to criticism. Okay, just the realities of life. And so now the relatives are coming in front of Rav Nachman. Amrlei kalavishu machzim yasme. Let me tell you what this guy's doing. He is dipping into the estate funds. He bought himself a wonderful suit, and that's crazy. He's misappropriating the funds of the estate. Amrlehu, Rav Nachman's defensive of the guardian. What do you mean? He's got to negotiate on behalf of the estate. He's got to look good. So part of looking good is it's a business expense. And yes, he can tap into the estate for these types of business expenses.
Regular minyan, there's no specialty minyan, gentlemen, today. Regular minyan, as if it's a Tuesday.
Ka'ach v'shasmi didu. So the Gemara says, yeah, but he's also eating. In other words, he's helping himself to a very nice per diem from the estate. Velo amud. So, and we know he's not wealthy. And did you see the kinds of restaurants he went to? So so Rav Nachman once again says, you don't know. You don't know the whole story. It could be that he found a metziah. Right, and again, let's not jump to conclusions. The ha kamafsid. So these relatives are saying, look, Rav Nachman, it's very nice that you're dan lekafschus. We know that he's depleting the estate's funds. We know it. Amalu, I see lesad the masiv asal kinu. So Rav Nachman says, okay, right. These are allegations. Give me witnesses to right testify, and then I'll remove him from his position. Da'amar Rav Huna Chavri Mishmei Derav Apetropus Demafse Mesalkinolei. The Gemara quotes the name of Rav that if he's depleting the funds of the estate, so then we remove him. Did Mar Apetropus Demafse Rav Huna Amar Rav Mesalkinolei Debei Rabbi Shila Amri Lo Mesalkinolei. There is an opinion, fascinating. There is an opinion in the Gemara that even if he's depleting the funds of the estate, you don't immediately extract him from his position. I guess it's a function of replacing him is not going to be that easy. Anyway, but the Gemara's conclusion is that if he's depleting the funds of the estate, so then you do in fact remove him from his position. Okay. I know we're almost done, but we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. We'll finish up the Apetropos Sugya, and we'll continue tomorrow with the new Mishnah.